Hi everyone, and thank you once again for joining us on Lit Radio Podcast. I'm your host for today, Thea. For this episode, I'll be speaking with Anthony Tasgau, or as he prefers to be called, Tas. We'll be talking about his new book, The Insight Book, and why insight is so important and valuable. Tas is a marketing consultant and educator who specializes in insight, behavioral economics, and storytelling. Prior to that, he was a planner for leading advertising agencies. He is the author of the best-selling book, The Storytelling Book. Tas's new title, The Insight Book, is an entertaining and enlightening guide to understanding and deploying insight to be able to see things differently and build a culture of insight. The author uses brand case studies and a variety of definitions and perspectives from art, science, and marketing. So thank you very much, Tas, for being on our podcast once again. I'm very excited to speak with you about your latest book, The Insight Book. But before we speak about that, could you let us know why and how you've become so passionate about insight?
Yeah, thanks for having me again. Insight's been something that I've worked on most of my professional life. I worked in advertising agencies. As what was called an account planner, strategist. And it became very apparent early on that what I was really trying to create was insight. So creative people, you know, create ads, they create posters, television, commercials, etc. But, you know, what a strategist, what a planners create, we write creative briefs, we work with creative people. But the thing that we really should be looking for is an insight, something that we can find, that we can distill from data, that we can turn into something that creative people will use as the basis for creating a new campaign or repositioning something, or maybe even for a client to completely change the way that they see their brand. So I got very interested in insight, even before it was called insight. And then I couldn't really understand why no one had really written anything about insight or written very much about insight, or indeed why most people didn't seem to understand or agree what it was. So that's pretty much the backstory, if you like, of how I got into insight.
And is that why you decided to write the insight book? Because not many people understand what it is?
Absolutely. It's one of those words where if you ask 20 people, especially 20 people who work in insight, what insight is, you'll probably get 20 answers. And I understand that it is one of those things that's hard to pin down. But I did think it was worth exploring some of the areas where insight is clear, and maybe where it isn't clear, I can actually bring a bit of clarity to it. Because an awful lot of people, especially in the research industry, in marketing, in sales, they'll talk about insight and how we have to find insight and how we have to deliver insight. But the problem is not everyone will agree what it is that they're meant to be looking for, and therefore whether they found it. So what I tried to do with the book was to look at some of those issues, maybe give some examples of actually what insight looks like. And then I've ended up really giving, I wouldn't say a recipe exactly, but some tips and tricks about what it is that will help you as an individual and help your culture create a sense of what insight is.
But can you define what insight is for us?
Ah, you see, how long have we got? I'll give you two or three examples, Taya. So I have a quote which I use a lot in the training and in the book, which is, information is to be collected, but insight is to be connected. So the difference is that insight isn't just the random collection or assemblage of data. It's about making connections between things. So an awful lot of the examples I talk about in the book are really about the idea that the brain makes unconscious connections between different areas or different domains or different ways of thinking. And when those two things come together, that's how you get an insight. So that's one of my definitions. I also really like talking about scientists. Again, anyone who's read any of my books, I do like talking about great examples from science, great scientific quotes, etc. And if anyone's listening who's
heard of or read Isaac Asimov. He wrote Foundation and Empire series, science fiction series, and I, Robot. Film fans, that was the one with Will Smith in. He was also a successful scientist. And he had a really nice saying, which I use all the time. He said, when scientists come up with something new, they don't go, "Eureka, I found it." They go, "That's funny." And for me, that's a really good insight into what insight is. The feeling of something funny, the feeling that it makes you think, oh, actually, you know, I hadn't thought of it like that, or that just makes me think a bit differently. So I think that's a very good sort of definition of what insight is. And I think the third area, I would say, is what insight isn't. So in the book, I talk an awful lot about not what insight is, because it is quite complicated, but how insight feels. And for me, I think that's a very useful way of sort of understanding what insight. How does it make you feel? If it makes you feel that's funny, if it makes you feel surprised, then it's probably an insight.
Mm. Yeah, I feel those are very nice definitions of insight. But then why is it important?
It's become increasingly important over the last, well, I don't know, 20, 30 years, really, which is because it's become a currency, I think, as I said earlier. Clients want insight. They want something that will change their business. They want their advertising to be more distinctive. They want their positioning to stand out. They want their website to be more attractive or to capture attention. And insight has become, rightly or wrongly, the way that everyone is looking for something that will transform their communications or their brand. So clients are desperate for insight. Research companies are rebranding themselves as insight companies. Conferences have been springing up all about what is insight and how can we get it. So it's become its own sort of little industry, really. So it's very important. But as I keep saying, it's important, but yet no one can quite understand where to get it from and how to, you know, exploit it, I think.
Mm. Yeah, you're right that it has become very important recently, but do you think that it has also become devalued or even cliched?
I think there's an argument for that. When I do my workshops, especially on storytelling, we have an exercise called Junk the Jargon, which was in the storytelling workbook. And I often say to people, okay, give me some examples of jargon you use in your company or in your market. And people will say, I don't know, lean and agile or solutionize. But occasionally people will sort of play me at my own game and say, well, actually, isn't insight itself becoming a bit of jargon? And, you know, there's a bit of me that thinks, yeah, I see what you mean, because it's become a little bit cliche. I must have an insight, or even worse, a client said to me once, you know, give me 5 insights. I, what? You want 5 insights? You know how difficult it is to come up with one. So part of the reason I've written the book really is a sort of an attempt to say to people, I don't think it should be devalued. I don't think it should be cliched. And we can avoid that if we try and understand what insight is, what it can do, and equally what it can't do. So I think that's my feeling on the matter.
Mm. All right, so let me read a short quote from the introduction of the book, which goes, "There is simply no automatic process whereby data gives insight, no effortless shift from data to ta-da." So has the research, data, and analytics world misunderstood insight as merely looking wonk and wongingly at data? And how do we turn data into insight?
Yeah, there's nothing better than having your own quotes thrown back at you and agreeing. So I do like that. And the data to ta-da thing is a deliberate soundbite. Because if there's a sort of gripe, if there's a complaint, a bit of a rant, if you like, at the heart of the book, and again, you'll know that I do like a good rant in my book. So the storytelling book and the workbook were very much saying, why do we have to produce presentations and documents and speeches that are so dull and so full of facts? The rant at the center of the insight book is why we ended up assuming that all we have to do is throw lots of data on a chart or in a slide or in a document and just give it to people and say, look, that's an insight. Well, it isn't. And as you've quoted, I really wanted to say at the beginning of the book, if you think that insight simply comes from staring longingly and long at data, if you think it's just going to come from immersing yourself in chart after chart or report after report, I'm afraid you're going to be sadly disappointed, because one of the things that runs through the book is insight is the first cousin of creativity. And creativity isn't linear, it's lateral, it's sideways on. It's, as I say, about making connections. So I really wanted to say in the section that you've quoted, particularly people who produce market research, but equally people who analyze market research and use it for their brands or for their clients, you've got to really, really appreciate that you're not going to get the sort of earth-shattering, surprising, aha, eureka insight just by staring at data. In fact, I even argue in the book that in many cases, especially if you look at creative people or scientists, they will often say that the insight comes despite all the data. It comes as a result of system one, your unconscious, making all these connections and milling things around. So I just want to draw apart, if you like, the reliance on data as the only way of getting insight.
And that's fascinating. But then you shared previously with me that with the book, you would like to challenge some of the misconceptions about insight. So could you share with our listeners now, what are the most popular misconceptions you want to challenge?
Yeah, I think following on from what I just said, the biggest misconception, absolutely, is that you need lots of data for insight. Now, I'm not going to say that you don't need data or you never need data. But the biggest misconception is that data and large amounts of data are the only way of getting to insight. Now, over the last few years, since I've been working with you, Taya and Lyd, and I do lots of conferences and speeches. And over however many years now, big data, right, that's become the buzzword. Big data is going to be the answer to everything. Big data will tell us everything we need to know about our customers, everything we need to know about their usage and their attitudes, which is great. But for me, big data, it's a misconception to think that big data will give you big insight. Because getting from data to insight, as I keep saying, is a creative, an interpretative leap, if you like. So the misconception is, if I just get enough data, I'll get an insight. Well, I'm afraid you won't. You have to have the right attitude. You have to have the right culture. So for me, that's the single biggest misconception about insight. I think the next one would be to think that only people who deal in research can come up with insights. Now, if you look at, as I do in the book, the history of insight, I find it mildly amusing, to say the least, that the market research industry thinks it invented insight, which I think would come as a shock to people like Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, Darwin, you know, Isaac Newton. I mean, that's what they've been doing for centuries. So if you look at it from that point of view, from the history of art or science or culture, these great writers and thinkers, they will talk about insight in a way that is very different. They'll talk about being able to see new combinations, being able to see the ideas colliding in their head and coming up with something new. So that's my second big misconception, which is a lot of it is unconscious. A lot of it happens in your brain. It's called incubation. Again, I wrote about it in part of the book. You have to get all your information, your data, but then you let your brain incubate, sit on it, and then your brain unconsciously will make these new connections, which will give you insight. So I think those are my two perhaps main misconceptions.
Yeah, thank you for sharing those. And then a term that you use in the book is an insight generator. Mm. So could you share with us what are the most important characteristics of a great insight generator?
Yeah, obviously, please buy the book because it's all in there. But in the last section, I really wanted to try and list a number of different areas that I think make an insight spotter, an insight generator, an insight creator. And I'll just give you sort of three or four, really. Because if I give you all, there's no need for you to buy the book, obviously. So the first one, and I do like my references from outside of marketing. Saul Bellow, a very famous American author. And in one of his, I think it was a novella, a small novel, actually, he talks about one of his characters and he describes him as a first class noticer. And I thought, that's a lovely expression. It's a lovely turn of phrase, a first class noticer. I think if you want to be a person who works in the field of insight, you've got to be a first-class noticer. You've got to notice things. You've got to have an eye for what's interesting or different, an eye for trends, for culture. So I think the first-class noticer I really like. Another characteristic I'll talk about, and I can't believe how long we've spoken already, Taylor, without me talking about any etymology, which, as anyone knows me, is very surprising. So let me talk about the word error, which I've mentioned in a couple of my books. So in you know, business and marketing, but also in life generally, we think of error as a mistake, a failure. But here's the etymology coming. So error comes from the Latin word meaning errare, or Latin errare, which means in English to wander. So in English, we have the word erratic, which means you're moving or you're driving erratically, you're wandering all over the place. So I think a good definition of what makes somebody good at insight is if they wander. Yes, you'll make mistakes, but you need to wander. So again, I work with many clients, and often clients who work in, I don't know, the car sector, or work as a venue like the Royal Albert Hall, or work as a big software company like Microsoft, that tends to be the only world that they operate in. And the thing about insight is you probably won't get insights if you only ever stay within the confines of your own sector. You need to wander outside of that sector. So that would be my second characteristic. And I think my third one, I mentioned in the book, there's a quote about being impertinent. And the person who comes up with new ideas doesn't ask pertinent questions, which means relevant. They ask impertinent questions, which has a sense of being slightly difficult or rude, like a child who doesn't know what to say. And again, I think if you want to find insights, you've got to ask impertinent, difficult questions about your product or your brand or your client. So those are just three. I think there's 10 or 11. And there's one other image before I just leave this section, Taya, which is that I use a couple of images at the bottom, at the end of the book. And I came up with this analogy simply because, like many people over the pandemic, I watched way too many detective series. And it occurred to me that you often see when the police are trying to piece together who the killer might be, they have a board on a wall, and it's usually called the murder board, right? So there's pictures of people, the suspects or maybe the victims, and there'll be locations, and there'll maybe a registration number of a car. And often there'll be like little threads leading from one picture or person to another. And I thought, you know what, that's not a bad analogy for how we need to think about insight. It's about putting those things, pictures, images, ideas, and then looking at the threads between them and trying to create a link. And again, I think that's what a good seeker after insight will do. So I think that's a reasonable start.
Yeah, I really like that analogy. And then because you come from a marketing background, could you tell us what are the most important benefits of using insight for marketers especially?
So the benefit of insight, marketers, whatever, want insight because it's about change. It's about transformation. And as you say, I've worked many years in marketing, advertising, communications, branding, whatever. And the single biggest thing that brands need is differentiation. They need to stand out, whether it's their positioning in a market, whether it's their website, whether it's their advertising, whether it's their internal comms. And insight for me, for marketeers, is absolutely essential because it is the best way of guaranteeing that your brand will stand out. So in the second section, the middle section of the book, I have, I think about, is it 14, something like that, examples of the way that insights have been used by brands. So just off the top of my head, I talk about The Guardian, their famous points of view campaign. I talk about the Marmite, Love It or Hate It, which was a brilliant insight, which absolutely changed the way that that brand was perceived and led to the huge sales increases. I talk about Starbucks, and I talk about a DVD release for a Quentin Tarantino film. So I'm trying to cover all the bases. And in all those cases, I show how the insight came about, but also how it led to those brands being incredibly successful, or their campaigns being incredibly successful. So for me, at the heart of it, that's what insight will, how insight can be used for marketeers.
Absolutely. Then, because some of our listeners, they're also business owners and business leaders. So next question, I think, would be useful for them. How do we build a culture of insight in companies? So how do we recruit for incitement?
Yeah, I use the word incitement. This is the culture that we should be creating in companies, incitement. So for me, there are a number of things, some of which I've talked about, those characteristics about being a first-class noticer, about wandering, about asking impertinent questions. But I think as a company and as a culture, I think one of the things that you want to do is to be diverse. Now, we're hearing a lot about diversity, you know, equality, diversity, inclusivity, all those things. But when I'm talking about diversity here, I'm not just talking about it in terms of, you know, different groups or cultures. I'm talking about backgrounds and the way that people think. So again, I think a culture of insight will best be developed if you've got people who think differently. I mean, as we know, the worst thing that can happen in a company is groupthink. If you've got a particular person or a particular view and everyone follows that view slavishly, you're never going to come up with insight. You need people with different attitudes, different backgrounds, different languages, different perspectives. And again, because I come from an ad agency background, that was one of the reasons why agencies were very good for their clients, because you have creative people, an art director and a copywriter, who are by definition creative. You've got account managers who are more rational, logical and process oriented. You've got planners like me who are more interested in how consumers think and how we understand what they want. So you've already got a different set of attitudes and cultures. And that for me is the most important thing in creating a culture that is fit and ready for incitement. Having that sort of breadth and diversity cognitively, if you like, as much as in any other way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you already shared a few examples earlier on in our conversation, but can you think of any more companies or brands or just campaigns that used insight creatively and effectively?
Yeah, I think at the moment, there are quite a few that have been around. There aren't that many new brands, I think, using sort of insight, which I think is, you know, is sad and disappointing. But one of the brands that I do talk about, and again, it's a sort of golden age of insight, was there was a famous campaign, I think in the 80s, actually, for The Guardian. And it was called Points of View. And it was shot from like the same scene shot from sort of three different angles. And the voiceover says, you know, seen from one angle, an action looks like it's happening in a particular way. Seen from another view. So the first one, it looks like you've got a skinhead and he's about to attack someone. The second one, you see it from a different angle and it looks like he's just about to sort of take this person's case. And in the third angle, which is the last part of the ad, you pull back and you see that this person isn't taking that man's case. He's pushing them out of the way because something has broken and a whole lot of bricks is going to drop on him. Now, I think that's a very good example of an insight. The idea that a newspaper should be about seeing things from different points of view. And it's a very, very famous piece of advertising. It's taught, I teach it in my advertising course. It's taught all over the place. And that's a really good, you know, example of an insight in a campaign. The Marmite one, which I will come back to because, you know, it's so great. And the insight, I think, is quite fascinating. It's not just the fact that people don't all like Marmite. It's really an insight, I think, about insight and about marketing, because marketing generally says to everyone, even if you don't like brand A, here are some reasons why you should. If you don't like sparkling water, or you don't like coffee, or you drive a Ford but not a Peugeot, here are reasons why you should do that. But the insight I think that Marmite used so cleverly was to say, actually, let's be honest. You can't persuade people who don't like Marmite to like Marmite. You just simply can't. They don't like it. I don't, again, you know me, Tao, I don't drink coffee. Can't bear it. You could say anything you like about coffee to me, but you can't persuade me because I don't like coffee. So I thought what was brilliant about the Marmite insight was just being honest and saying, actually, a lot of people don't like Marmite, and that's fine. That's fine. It's okay not to like something. But what they did was to build that campaign, build that sense of debate and controversy and conflict about do you love it or do you hate it, which was a fantastic piece of thinking. And they're still using it now. And it's allowed them to diversify the brand and do all sorts of things. So it's an incredibly important, significant insight for Marmite. So, you know, I don't think you can come up with a better example of that off the cuff.
Yeah, those are indeed great examples. And then finally, could you share with us your most important tips that can help brands and companies use insights to their benefits?
I think we talked about some of this already, but I think, again, off the top of my head, what I would say, the most important tip is always to look for surprise. And this is more than just insight. If you are commissioning some research, if you're getting a report from a market research company, a trends company, I do an awful lot, a lot of work through the Civil Service College with bits of government. And obviously they are producing huge amounts of reports and data and stuff. But the tip is always, okay, what are you telling me that is new and surprising? If it's not new and surprising, I don't want to know. I don't want to hear it. And I will say that. That for me is one of the, again, behavioral economics is one of the other areas that I write and talk about. And hopefully it'll be book six. And behavioral economics says that one of the most important emotions that affects us is surprise. And that for me is the key. As I said before with the Asimov quote, the first tip is always surprise me. And if you're not going to surprise me, don't waste my time. That would be my first tip. The second tip, as I say, I'm not going to repeat it, but it's about making sure you have a breadth of ways of thinking, a breadth of ways of coming at your brand, that you're not just talking to the same people in the same way. And I think my third tip is, which again is especially with communications, is look at the conventions of your market, of your brand. So if I ask anyone, and I do this all the time in my training, describe to me the typical car ad. Everyone will say the same thing. You know, it's driving up a winding lane, probably on a mountain. It's shot from above. It's being driven by a man. If there's a woman in it, she's probably a passenger. Why does everyone do that? Because they all look the same. They're the same conventions. So my third tip is try and look at the conventions, whether you're aware of them or not, and ask, do you need them? Do they have to be? Does every ad have to be for a car ad? Have to look like that? Does every ad for a mobile phone have to have balloons? You know, so my third tip is always look at what you think you need. And if you don't need it, don't have it in there because it gets in the way. The gorilla ad, I did some training yesterday. People reminded me of the Cadbury gorilla ad. There is no one in that ad. No humans in that ad. There is no one eating chocolate in that ad. There is no chocolate in that ad because it's all about joy and it's about the drummer and the gorilla. So again, one of the tips, perhaps my final tip would be to say, you don't have to do what you've always done. You don't have to follow the conventions. And one of the best ways of getting to insight is to deliberately look at and get rid of as many of those conventions as you can. So that would be my final tip, I think, Tao.
Thank you very much for sharing those tasks. I think those were amazing, and of course people can read more in your fifth book, the Insight book. So thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me today.
pleasure as ever, Tahir.
Thank you so much for joining us today, and thanks everyone for listening. Don't forget to keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and at Lit Business Media on LinkedIn for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. We are now also on TikTok, so make sure you follow us at Lit Publishing. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.